Stand, please. Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, I admonish to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Morning.
My name is Jeff Levitke, representing appellant at the Gunderson Lutheran Medical Center. May it please the court. The Secretary's determination in this case was patently unreasonable because it did not incorporate any requirement whatsoever for notification to the provider. The entire purpose of this statute was to ensure that providers are promptly notified of the disposition of their exception request. And absent a requirement for notification, that purpose simply cannot be fulfilled. I would submit to the court that the Secretary's determination is fatally flawed because it states that the only requirement is making the decision. That is the only requirement. Now that leaves the hospitals in the impossible position of having to consult an oracle at Delphi to determine exactly what the high priest of CMS have decided. Our view is that the concept of notification is inherent in the concept of disapproval, and I would urge the court to consider that this statute is really intended as a penalty provision to CMS. Even if the CMS determination is only 1 minute late, the exception request is deemed approved. Now, one may question, and even without regards to the merits of the exception request, now, one may question the wisdom of such a legislative judgment, but the fact that the legislature has made that judgment cannot be disputed. In our view, it seems that the most important thing is to ensure that that deterrent requirement is fulfilled, because if CMS's determination in this case is allowed to stand, and if that final determination is allowed to stand, there is no notification requirement to the provider.
Why didn't they put a notification requirement in the language of the statute?
Your Honor, I think it was just assumed that the notification was inherent in the disapproval. The action of disapproval itself is just purely a metaphysical exercise, absent some communication of that decision.
Well, the communication does happen, at least in these kinds of cases, to the fiscal intermediary.
It did happen in that case, Your Honor, but the...
So this is actually a narrower case than some of the hypotheticals you offered about making a decision, sticking it in your drawer.
Well, that's true, Your Honor.
So there is a communication of the decision to the fiscal intermediary, and as the name implies, the intermediary is the intermediary between the between HHS and between the entity at issue in this case. So isn't that a situation where at least there's been some communication of a decision that looks like disapproval?
Well, Your Honor, I think the term intermediary is maybe slightly misleading. The intermediary, it is true, as you said, is an intermediary between the two, but the intermediary functions solely as the agent of the Secretary. Mm-hmm. Now, in this case, the communication to the intermediary simply does not fulfill the entire purpose of this statute, which is to ensure that hospitals are advised. That's the entire purpose of the statute, to make sure that hospitals are given notification.
Where is that in the purpose of the statute?
Well, Your Honor, it's in the legislative history that...
What specifically are you referring to?
We've said it in our briefs, but in the legislative history, it states, the House report accompanying the statute, that these determinations on exception requests are long delayed. and that there would have been no possible reason, Your Honor, for Congress to impose.
No, I'm asking for what in the legislative history referred to the communication to the provider.
It does not, Your Honor.
I didn't think so.
No, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question.
Mm-hmm. It does not.
So I would just ask the court to again consider the nature that the secretary had the option of implementing regulations in this case. They chose the regulations they implemented to simply parrot the language of the statute. So there is only one time period stated in the statute and in the regulations, and that's 60 days. And so because notification is inherent in the concept of disapproval, then that 60-day period must be also the period for notification.
When you say notification, suppose it were put on a website, but the particular entities were not specifically notified. They had to go check a website. Would that suffice in your theory?
Yes, I think so, Your Honor.
Okay. I think that's the case with respect even to putting it in the reading room.
I would agree, Your Honor.
I think that's it. We have some tax cases on that.
Right. I think that would suffice, Your Honor. And if there are no further questions for the court, I would reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Samuel?
Thank you, Judge Kavanaugh, and may it please the court. The calculation of time under Section 1395RR does not turn on when the provider is notified of the decision, but rather when that decision is rendered. The reason that it does not is, first of all, Section 1395RR says absolutely...
Is the word rendered? Is the word in the statute rendered?
No, the word in the statute is disapproves, yeah. Which we think...
But you imply that it must be rendered, right?
We absolutely think it must be rendered.
In your brief, you say it must be made available.
Well, I think that section of our brief is dealing with the argument about FOIA.
Yes, but you, in a relationship, you do concede that the decision must be made available.
Under FOIA, before we can rely on it, that party has to have actual notice or be made available, yes.
You couldn't assert your rights under the statute without relying on it. I mean... If you disapprove, then you rely on it, right?
That is true, yes.
So you do concede, and I think correctly, that you have to make available your decision.
Certainly, and of course the Secretary has every incentive to do so.
Well, naturally. So now the question is, what does make available mean?
Well, in this case, there's no question that the Secretary made it available within the ordinary way that all decisions under the Medicare Act are made available, through the fiscal intermediary. So before...
Well, it's clear as a bell that you couldn't simply write on a little notepad at night, I disapprove, and that would be the end.
We agree that would be very unusual.
It wouldn't work. That's not making it available.
Within the... that is not, as FOIA uses the term, we don't think that is making available anything.
So that's not legal. So would it be legal to make it available to your spouse in the middle of the night?
We think clearly not.
Okay. So then, therefore, you would have to make it available to whom?
Well, that's the question that FOIA doesn't answer because it's a general statute. Here, the ordinary way the Medicare Act works is making it available to the fiscal intermediary with whom the exception request was filed. Now, that's the way the Medicare Act works, and it's very specific. The ordinary way that the Secretary communicates her decisions is through the third-party intermediaries for very good reasons with whom she contracts for that purpose. So in this context of this statute, the way that things are made available is through detailed regulatory provisions that govern exactly that. So there's no question here that it was made available. And in the alternative, that is one of the two ways in which an agency is permitted under FOIA.
But if you say that FOIA, and you agree that FOIA, although it does not contradict the statute, it does give it an interpretive gloss, why isn't FOIA's terms relevant there, which is that it must be in a reading room?
Well, FOIA has two alternative ways that the agency is permitted to rely on the statute. So the first way is, you're right, of course, it's either made available or published as provided in the paragraph in a reading room. The second way is that an agency may rely on the decision if the party has actual and timely notice thereof.
Timely notice?
Yes.
Well, why isn't timely notice within 60 days?
Because the only thing that Section 1395RR requires is that the disapproval occur within 60 days. That is, at the very least, ambiguous as to the question of notice. And although we agree it would be a one reasonable interpretation of the statute for the Secretary to decide, I'm going to interpret that to require notice within 60 days, the Secretary is entitled under Chevron to choose between reasonable interpretations of the statute.
So the two reasonable interpretations would be, one, give notice to the provider, and what's the other one?
Well, the other one is that the decision must be made within 60 days, and then in the ordinary course, the provider has to be notified, you know, within the regular time frame for doing so thereafter.
What's that? What's the regular time frame?
There's nothing specifically in either the end-stage renal disease program or in the Medicare Act more generally providing a sort of default deadline for the notification of providers, but what the Secretary has every incentive to do is exactly what she did here, which is promptly notify the parties of the decisions that she makes. She wants to do that because...
You mean the intermediary?
The intermediary, yes. Through the intermediary, notify the parties. And the reason for that, of course, is that the Secretary wants these decisions to be known to the providers so that claims are not submitted that shouldn't be submitted or for amounts that are improper. So that's why we don't see any examples of what Gunderson suggests in its brief, these hypotheticals. The Secretary wants to do what was done here, which is notify people in a prompt way of the decisions.
So your position is a more modest one than the one that seemed to be implicit in the briefs, which was, I thought in the briefs I was reading that the disapproval could be made by the relevant official in his mind or on a little piece of paper that he put in his drawer or his wife being told. That is not your position.
That is not our position. Our position is that when the administrator's decision says the decision has to be made and rendered, we understand that to mean rendered in an official way, signed and dated and essentially
communicated to somebody.
Well, we don't think that the actual in other words, if it wasn't placed in the mail until the 61st day, say the decision was made on the 59th day and placed in the mail on the 61st day, we think that that would still be a disapproval that occurred within the 60-day period. Now,
mailed to whom there? The fiscal intermediary?
The fiscal intermediary, yes.
That is. Okay, but you don't even need us to say that in this case because it was mailed to the fiscal intermediary within 60 days, correct?
That is correct. It was mailed to the fiscal intermediary in the 56th day. So you're right that this case does not present that issue, but that is the interpretation, and I don't want to back off of what the administrator has actually said. But yes, in this case, it doesn't arise because it was communicated even to the fiscal intermediary within the 60-day window. So in this case, and that is the usual way that these things are done, because the secretary has really no incentive at all to do anything other than what she did here, which is timely notify the parties of timely made decisions. There's been a lot of talk about the statutory purpose of this section, and what the statute requires is prompt action on these exception requests.
All right, let me just nail one thing down. It is clear, is it not, that in order to, even under your view, in order to meet the statutory standard, the decision to disapprove has to be communicated outside the agency.
We don't think that the disapproval to be effective has to be communicated within the 60-day window. It has to be sort of rendered, signed,
well,
dated.
How is it rendered if it's not communicated? That's what's confusing me.
The way that these decisions work is that they're prepared and then signed and dated. And essentially, once it's ready to be placed in the mail, in other words, secretary has arrived.
Wait. Suppose I signed it, I'm the relevant official. I signed it and dated it within the 60 days. Then I change my mind and revoke it 61 days later. What's that? How does that work?
Well, if what you were changing your mind to do was to disapprove it on the 61st day, we don't think that would be within the 60-day window. Now, if you changed your mind to approve it on the 61st day, then I doubt the provider would have much truck with that. But any disapproval within the 60-day window that is...
So there has to be evidence that I disapproved within the 60 days.
Yes, precisely right.
What kind of evidence is required?
Well, the kind of evidence that is in this case, which is a written document that is signed by the relevant official, that is dated and...
And it has to be transported to someone, otherwise it's in his personal use and could be changed at any time.
Well, yes, we think, but by the, of course, by the time that it reaches the...
It has to be communicated to somebody.
It does, although we don't think that it has to be communicated within the 60-day window, but by the time it is relied upon by the agency, it does have to have been communicated to someone, yes. That's for the
reason. Well, in this case, it was communicated within the 60-day window.
It was in this case.
So you don't even... we're not forced to ask that question.
That is correct. This case presents really the only the narrow issue because the 60-day window included here both the disapproval and the transmission of that disapproval to the fiscal intermediary. So this case doesn't present any of the more exotic hypotheticals that Gunderson proposes in their brief. And so you're right that there's no need, but I do, you know, I don't want to misrepresent what the agency thinks that statute means, which is the disapproval has to be made and rendered in some sort of written form with the signature of the relevant official, such that it can be entered into evidence and can appear later in the board review stage.
In the previous sentence, I think you said transmitted.
If I said transmitted, then that was a mistake. Not transmitted. It has to be rendered in writing, signed by the relevant official within the 60-day period. And now, of course, it has to be, eventually has to be shared with someone before it can be relied upon. That's the general provision of FOIA. But if it is, the decision is made on the 59th day, rendered in writing, signed by the relevant official, is communicated on the 61st day, we believe that is a disapproval that suffices to stop automatic approval because the disapproval has occurred within the 60-day period. Now, this case, as you have noted, does not present that question of straddling that line, but that is our view.
Why are you concerned? Why are you arguing this? Why do you fight this issue? Why doesn't the, just as a practical matter, why doesn't the Secretary always communicate the disapproval within the 60 days?
Well, I'm not aware of any instance in which we know for sure that the Secretary has communicated it outside of the 60-day window.
Yeah, this one. No, I can communicate to the provider.
Well, the communication to the intermediary, from the intermediary to the provider, is not wholly within the Secretary's control.
But the Secretary could communicate to both at the same time.
It's true, but the ordinary way that this works is that all communications to the providers run through the intermediary simply as a matter of administration. Now, of course, there it might be as a matter of sound administrative practice. I mean, this case does occur, 10 years ago. As a sound matter of administrative practice, whether the Secretary should choose to do things differently, that might well be wise. But it is not, at least, required by the statute. And in this instance, the intermediary promptly recommunicated to Gunderson. They had, very nearly the full 180 days to decide on their appeal, which they timely filed with plenty of time left. So as a matter of what the statute requires, we don't think that is one of the things. See, I'm over my time. If there are no further questions, we're prepared to submit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I would just wish to emphasize that the Secretary's final decision does not mention any obligation for timely notification to the intermediary, nor does it mention any obligation for timely notifications to the provider. Now, I understand that counsel has asserted that that is the policy of CMS, but that's not what it says in the Secretary's decision. The Secretary's decision simply fails to recognize any such requirement. All the Secretary's decision states, which is the decision under review by this court, all the decision of the Secretary states is the only thing that's required is rendering the decision.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means, exactly. And also,
but is it necessary for us to reach the more difficult questions if we see a narrower basis here?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, obviously, as rule of courts are always deciding cases on the narrow basis as possible, but it seems to me that in this case we are presented with a case in which the key issue is when is notification to the provider occur? And it seems to me that notification to the provider is the essential issue, not notification to the intermediary, because it's hard to see how notification to the intermediary furthers the purpose of this statute, which was clearly enacted to ensure that hospitals
got prompt responses from the government, right?
The prompt response, the government should respond promptly.
That's what the statute requires.
Well, I think the statute requires actually 60 days.
Yeah, that's prompt.
That's prompt. Yes. That's very prompt. And yes. I think it's important to bear in mind for that reason that this is a very unusual type of statute, because it's very unusual in that the Congress would impose this type of a penalty provision on an agency for failing to comply. So I think it has to be construed strictly by virtue of the fact that it is a penalty against CMS.
Is Mr. Samuel correct in your experience that most communications occur through the intermediary?
Yes, Your Honor, and as Mr. Samuel said, that is a matter of administrative choice on the part of the Secretary. But there is absolutely no reason why the Secretary couldn't just as easily decide to communicate directly to the provider. The Secretary has established a process which, in my view, makes it more cumbersome for the Secretary to render a decision on a timely basis, but that was the Secretary's decision.
Is there any reason why you couldn't have called the provider simply to ask that you get notification within the 60 days?
Your Honor,
called the intermediary.
Right. Your Honor, we don't know, I don't believe from the record here, even that the intermediary, I would have to go back and check that. I believe we do know from the record, actually, I'd have to check the date on which the intermediary received the decision.
It was within the 60 days.
I believe that's right, Your Honor. It was within the 60 days, and it was transmitted after that. The problem with the intermediary...
Transmitted after that to you.
Right. The problem with the intermediaries is that these are very, very large insurance companies, and calling them up...
They don't answer the phone?
They don't answer... Calling them up would be like calling the IRS up and asking where the status of my tax return is. It's just not likely.
You answer that.
Right. It's not plausible.
I'm not sure that your premise is correct, that you're not going to get an answer, especially in these days where you just plug in the number into the computer and tell you the status.
It would be very easy for them to resolve this issue simply by putting their decision on the Internet, which is what FOIA requires.
Mr. Levitsky, you said earlier the statute imposes a penalty.
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Because there's no requirement for prejudice. There is no requirement that the provider demonstrate prejudice from the government's failure to timely act. So because there is no requirement for prejudice, then it really is a penalty, because it's not to compensate the provider for a loss.
Penalty for doing what?
A penalty for failing to act within the 60-day time period. The penalty...
It seems to me, an indulgence. It says if you don't object, you don't have to do anything, Mr. Secretary.
Well, actually, what it says, Your Honor, is that they have to do something. They have to disapprove.
Yeah, if you don't disapprove, if you don't object to the request,
in a sense,
you don't have
yes.
to do anything.
In a sense, exactly.
Why? Because that's the default rule makes sense, because most of the time you're not going to object.
That's right. And I think that in many cases, that's exactly
that
what
sounds like a penalty. That sounds like an efficient default rule.
Right, but it's certainly a prod to make sure that these hospitals at least get notification, at least know what the status of their exception request is.
What is seems to be? Is there any difference between this regime and the regime by which litigants are held to deadlines from the time an order is issued? Say a deadline for filing a notice of appeal, even if they didn't receive it. And we've said they should be calling the clerk's office if the time gets short.
Well, Your Honor, that's a slightly different situation here, because there is no clerk's office, obviously, in the scene.
As you said, you could call the fiscal intermediary.
Right. And again, of course, those are, extremely bureaucratic organizations and, getting an answer. But
the clerk's offices in some circuits might be very bureaucratic organizations. This is a small circuit, and there are those who love it, but there are large circuits out there, too.
Well, Your Honor, I assure you, I've never had trouble finding an answer in any of the court's decisions. All I do is go on the Internet and find
it. You can't do that with regard to the issuance of it. Well, now you can. Pardon me. You can do that with the docket, yes.
Right.
That's right. A new thing. That's
right.
But the rule predates the electronic access.
And I think in answer to your question, the procedure has been made unnecessarily cumbersome by the secretary by requiring going to the fiscal intermediary, or by going to the fiscal intermediary. It's not required, but as a matter of choice.
You said the secretary acknowledges no obligation except to render the decision. Where does that appear?
That is in the agency's final decision,
Your Honor. Yeah, give me a page, though.
Yes, Your Honor. It's in the appendix, the joint appendix, and it would be JA-49. But more specifically than JA-49, it's the decision part of JA-49, which is at, it's JA...
Isn't it 54?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. It's JA-53 to 54. It's actually the penultimate paragraph is the last paragraph on page 54.
The administrator finds the plain language of the statute using the word disapproves requires that CMS render the disapproval of the exception request within the 60-day statutory period. So there's acknowledging an obligation to render, as you understand it, involves rendering it to you?
No, Your Honor. As I understand the Secretary's interpretation, if that was the Secretary's interpretation,
okay,
we
so
would
you're
have...
saying that
we would
all have they're won. Acknowledging is that they have to make the decision. Really.
Exactly.
But is making it, rendering a decision, making a decision?
Well, I think what
you don't make unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. You render it.
In my opinion, making a decision has in it a requirement for communication, otherwise to the affected party. But according to CMS, all that they need to do is render a decision. So under CMS's
if they have to render it, if I'm correct that one has to render something to a person or a thing. Not just render it in the abstract.
Then, exactly.
Then it's rendered to the fiscal intermediary, right?
Well, it actually should be. It was in this case rendered to the fiscal intermediary. But our position, if this is taken,
I understand your position. Right. But to clone it out of the word, to take it out of the word render,
right,
is to make a completely reasonable interpretation. But so is the secretary's, isn't it?
Well, the term render is a rather abstract term, Your Honor, but it seems to me what it means here is they have to make up their – CMS is what they're saying, is they have to make up their mind as to what they want to do.
I thought they acknowledged they've got to notify the fiscal intermediary.
No, Your Honor, it's not in there.
No, it's not in here, I understand, but they just say they have to render it. They don't say to whom or to anyone or back up.
We take an oral argument. They concede that they have to – that render includes communication.
Oh, that's an oral argument, Your Honor, but the decision under review is not the Secretary's assertion or counsel's assertion.
That's a fair point, but we can certainly acknowledge the facts in this case as being adequate to meet even your position as we interpret.
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because...
I know, because your position is it has to be rendered to you, not rendered to Caesar.
Right. Rendering to Caesar...
Ask the question, if someone says, I rendered the decision on day 57, you would say, to whom did you render it?
Right.
And the answer, if the answer were to no one, it would not make any sense, right?
Right, it would not make any sense.
So I don't think that the fact that the... Mr. Samuel's making that point at oral argument really adds anything to what's inherent in the terms that we've been arguing about. We're talking about rendering. Rendering by its nature means rendering to someone, but not necessarily to anyone in particular.
Well,
that's the argument, whether it's you in particular.
Right. The argument is, Your Honor, that the statute requires more than rendering to anyone. It requires a rendering to the provider. That's the key point.
It just didn't use that language, though, and it's used elsewhere in the statute, and it's used in the Constitution when the president has to return a bill within 10 days. It has to be returned to the House. He can't just write out a veto message and leave it sitting in the White House. It has to actually physically be returned, and that's consistent with how the Medicare statute works. A lot of things require specific notice to you. But this statute does not.
Well, Your Honor, I would just that there's nothing in the statute that requires, uses the term notice, but it would have just made no sense for Congress to have enacted such a statute without contemplating notification to the provider within some specified time, specific time period. And the only specific time period in the statute and in the Secretary's regulations is the 60-day period.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.